Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. It is a very smoothly run machine. I am Liz Loza. Right there is Matt Harmon. He's next to me. And Brett Rader, our producer, is making things happen on a keyboard back there. And we are just finishing up week 4.
Well, we still have a Sunday night football game.
But
can't talk about a Sunday night football. That would be a big problem. I think that, this week kind of felt a little dry to me. Did you feel the same way? I'm not coming, like last week I felt like I came off with a lot of big, like more grand conclusions, you know, some like pivotal league-wide talking points. I don't really have that as much.
I think what you're also saying is that 3 games in, you can say that now it's no longer fluky. Like we're starting to decide who teams are. Enough evidence has been shown that we can piece together some tangible theories and conclusions. But one of those, I think, was a little bit turned on its head in the Cleveland Ravens game. Mm-hmm. So that if we're talking about grand conclusions, we had one, and now I'm a little bit unsure of it. Lamar Jackson did pass he did throw 3 touchdowns, so that's great. But Hollywood Brown didn't have the bounce back game that we were anticipating. Mark Ingram fumbled. That was kind of weird.
What a shame.
Not really like him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not.
He's been super reliable.
Yeah. Willie Snead goes, only catches 2 balls, but he has a touchdown for 61 yards.
Miles Boykin got in the end zone.
Mark Andrews continues to beast, even though he's not 100%. So I did think this was a little bit wonky. Odell Beckham Jr., though, 20 receiving yards.
Like, I mean,
so what are you doing with OBJ now? Like, let's do that, because that's a big star name that a lot of people were drafting as their first wide receiver overall.
Yeah. Myself included, I had him as my number 2 receiver overall in drafts. I had him as a guy that, you know, I would take in the back half of the first round. So I have him on a decent amount of teams, and I'm not like worried in the slightest, to be honest with you. Like, I don't really care that he's.
You're not worried at all, despite the fact that he's only had one big game and it was against the Jets?
Yeah, he's had one massive game. I mean, he hasn't like exploded onto the scene yet. The whole offense, I think, is still trying to find itself. So I still think by the way, 7 for 71, like, you're going to take that from your wide receiver sometimes. Like, you're going to take 6. Like, okay, I totally get it. Like, 2 for 20, that's tough to swallow today. That's tough. But, like, you have to expect that receivers occasionally are going to get, like, 6 for 56, those type of lines. And in general, I'm okay with that. I still think the best is yet to come for Baker, Odell, these guys. Like, I think winning in the way they did today too, like, when you have a running back who goes off for 160 plus yards, 3 touchdowns, like, totally carries the load of not just the running game, but the entire offense.
We saw hints of that in week 3, that might be a potential thing that was happening.
For sure. So I think this was actually a good, like, I think this team needed a win, and like a legit win, because win against the Jets, you know, like, who cares, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you beat Luke Falk for like 75% of the game.
Well, and if they had lost that game, I mean, the expectations were so high for that game that there would be a lot of crazy making in the head. But I do think when you're looking at OBJ, like, I also just, he and Baker Mayfield, forget the numbers piece of it. When you watch, they're not in rhythm.
No, they're not yet on the same page. And it's worth noting too that Beckham came into the year a little banged up. Mm-hmm. Missed some practice time.
It's his MO.
Yeah, that's his MO. Like, there's still some chemistry that I think needs to be found there. So in all, I'm not too worried about it. You know, this is the thing. Like, Jarvis Landry pops up for a big game today, and like, he and Baker do know each other very well.
I guess what I'm talking about is like managing your expectations, and when you are, I don't think you can put OBJ in your roster and assume you're going to get a double-digit fantasy outing on a week-to-week basis.
No, probably not. This is still like the only stone disaster game that
same for Devontae Adams, though, by the way, until this past week against a very beatable secondary, though.
I mean, this is the thing about like what wide receivers, right? Like, I think they are overall more like week to week volatile than running backs. Like, when you have a top of the line running back, you expect them to go out there and get 10 points, you know,
you expect them to score a touchdown.
Yeah. Score a touchdown, get 80 plus yards. Great. That's not the case with wide receivers, because matchups, you know, and also like wide receivers, the top level guys maybe are going to only get the ball thrown to him like 8 to 10 times a game. Few players like really average, you know, 13, 15 targets a game or anything like that. So you expect this sort of volatility from top level wide receivers. It happens to everyone. It's happening to DeAndre Hopkins right now too. It doesn't mean anything about the player. It doesn't always mean anything about the player. It doesn't always mean anything. It certainly doesn't mean anything about the position as a whole. But the thing with wide receivers and why people do prefer them is they, number one, they do have like an outrageous ceiling. You know, mm-hmm. some of these guys like an Odell Beckham can go out and put up 180 plus yards and a touchdown on the Jets defense and just really tilt your fantasy week. Devontae Adams can do that on Thursday Night Football. And also they don't have the same, type of season long volatility where like, oh, you have Saquon Barkley and now you're banged because he's just out for an extended period of time. There's much more injury risk at the running back position. The numbers do bear that out historically.
So then are you as calm about Marquise Brown?
Well, I mean, it's certainly like a different situation, right? You know, it's not
because
the same
because his draft capital wasn't as high?
Well, it's not the same player. Like, I think Marquise Brown's great, but Odell Beckham's
over the first
like
2 weeks of the season, we were considering him like a top wide receiver.
Yeah, I think he's still a guy that you have to – what I said about him coming off of week one is probably still how I feel about him now, which is he's a guy that you have to accept that there's a floor here because of the way he's used, because of the style, because of his quarterback too. Like, I think Lamar is having that incredible second-year leap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if the – like, the Ravens are 2-2 now. You know, they're not at the same level as they were a couple of weeks ago. But they are still – a strong contending team, their quarterback has gotten them there. So I think if Lamar continues to have the second year leap, then you're still going to want to feel the same way about Marquise Brown, which is basically you have to know there's a floor here. There's going to be volatility because of the way he's used. However, you're going to every week have to ask yourself, like, am I putting 20 points on the bench? Because we know he has that within his range of outcomes.
Should we put some respect on the Lions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Look,
I think we can agree on that.
I don't know if it's because I'm just overcorrecting, because I don't think I was alone on this. I think a lot of people thought the Lions would be kind of a joke. I thought they'd be a pushover. Like, look, coming into the year, I didn't respect Matt Patricia as a head coach, as like the head man of this organization.
No, he was screaming around yelling at reporters on a Rascal or something.
An ATV.
Which even
seems more like burly ass man or whatever. Number two, like, was just kind of done with Matt Stafford as like the leader of a team, like a franchise quarterback type. Maybe just lost him in the shuffle of all these young breakout guys. Also had thought the defense would still be a sieve, and also just, you know, didn't really believe in their team identity as like a run the ball type organization. But so far, none of that has like bared out to be the case. I mean, I don't know if Patricia's the answer long term for this team, but Stafford's played really well. Their passing game has been pretty fun in terms of getting the ball down the field. And their defense is also no pushover. I know that they still lose the game. Like, that's the thing. Like, the Lions aren't soaring or anything. They're 2-1-1, and they really should have won that game in week one, and they really let this game get away from them. But overall, like, right now, this team looks pretty good. Their defense deserves some respect based on the fact that they held Patrick Mahomes under 60% completion and didn't let up a touchdown.
I mean, I think it's a marriage of the old Lions and the new Lions, and the old Lions, particularly under the Matt Stafford era, is that this is a quarterback and thus an offense that rises to the level of competition, right? Like, if they're playing a bad team, they're probably not going to have a productive outing. Like, that's always been the way Stafford has played. I do think it's awesome to see. Also, Kenny Golladay is good. And this
so
is,
good, yeah.
You know, in the pre-draft process, I had him ranked as my wide receiver 17, which was not nearly high enough. I bought into the whole, this team is telling us who they want to be and they want to establish the run. And that means less opportunities for Kenny Golladay. So I'm going to take the potential scheme over talent. And I was mistaken. He is beasting. Also, with Danny Amendola out in this one, you saw TJ Hockenson score and then try to replicate what Logan Thomas did earlier and hurdle a defender and get concussed in the process.
So, well. Yeah.
So I don't think he will play next week. It'll be interesting to see if Danny Amendola is out. Although, wait, are they on bye next week? Let's look that up.
Yeah. Either way, overall, I think your points are right. Like, let me tell you about Kenny Golladay. Liz, you're talking about being like wide receiver 17. You didn't have him high enough. I had Kenny Galladay like outside my top
20. They are on bye.
Top 20 wide receivers. So like I took a big fat L on Kenny Galladay like 2 weeks ago in my care don't care column that I post every Sunday night. Basically saying like, yeah, I don't care about any of the volume concerns about Kenny Galladay or like any of the offensive concerns that I had going into the year because like he's number one. Like this is a clear situation where talent is like making opportunity. You know, we always try to say like opportunity rules all. Like you want to go with opportunity over talent or you know what the coaches think over what you think about their talent. Like, and that's all generally true, but sometimes a player is so good that it creates opportunity for themselves, and that's what's happening with Kenny Galladay here. So I'll take the big fat L on how I view Kenny Galladay.
We both get to take a big W on Kerryon Johnson, who finally had himself a game, and this was lovely to see. He went for over 100 yards. He did have 20 carries last week against the Eagles in this post CJ Anderson era, which was lovely to see as well, but obviously a tough matchup against the Eagles. He does much better this go around. He, to me, is continuing to be like, you know, we had the fantasy footballers on our show earlier in August, and
this one,
this one, Josh was Josh,
Jason
was, I did it again, was very, high on Kerryon. I've
think he had him as like top 12 running back, right?
I think he had him top six.
Oh,
right. Like to me, he's in that low end RB1, high end RB2 range. But now after this outing, I feel much more comfortable consistently ranking him there.
Yeah, I mean, they want him to be the feature piece of the offense, and then they kind of signal that with, like, sending C.J. Anderson out of the picture.
And adding Paul Perkins.
And adding, yeah, you didn't even really need to say that. That's not really, like, adding anything. But, like, the opportunity had been there, and I think, like you said, last week was actually a really good signal because the opportunity was there, and it's like, yeah, you're doing that against the Eagles. Why does anybody run the ball against the Eagles? Like, they're the – we talk about these defenses that, like, invite – they're like a funnel defense. They invite one side of the ball to attack them with the way they're set up. And the Eagles are so bad in the secondary and still so good as a run defense. Like, why does anybody, you know, bother?
I do want to talk about the running back or the backup running back who's starting in place of Saquon Barkley, the starter in New York. Because, man, if you spent a lot of money, a big portion of your fab budget on Wayne Gallman, you were at least happy this week.
Yeah, you're feeling pretty good with two TDs against the damn Washington football team.
Dose. Touchdowns, one through the air, one via the ground. The matchup, though, was incredible. Did you watch this game particularly closely?
No, I mean, I got to be honest. I don't hate myself that much.
I saw Dwayne Haskins go in, and I was like, oh, I hope you all get what you asked for. Are you really excited? You want Case Keenum to be benched? Look what happens. But yeah, so he did. I don't think his matchup next week is not particularly favorable. And he actually only, I believe, has...
They're playing the Patriots coming up soon. I'm not particularly like... The thing about Wayne
Gallman... It's Minnesota.
Yeah.
Minnesota next week. It's a brutal stretch. So.
I'm not particularly like jazzed up about Wayne Gallman, you know, as a player, but this was a situation where it's like he's the only game in town, you know, like and even the numbers today weren't super efficient. By the way, Washington's another one of these defenses where it's like, why does anybody try to run against them? Because they're actually doing pretty well as a run defense. They're top 10 against running backs in terms of like yards and fantasy points allowed and stuff like that, but they just get creamed in the secondary. But you know, Gallman, 18 carries, only 63 yards, whatever, but does get 6 for 55 through the air. That was, I think, the most encouraging beyond the two touchdowns, you know, whatever that can come and go as things happen. But the six catches was actually probably pretty encouraging overall for him because, like I said, he really is the only game in town. And, you know, Saquon Barkley is such a big part of this passing game in terms of what he can do through the air that it was nice to see, like, yeah, Gallman's not going to be that type of dynamic player. But
I wonder if that changes when Golden Tate returns to the fold. So I don't know if Gallman is going to continue to have that high floor in terms of receiving work once Golden Tate, who is does that same thing, comes back into the fold.
All in all, this is an offense that, like, I'm liking more and more the way I look at it, too. And, you know, because I still think that Daniel Jones, you know, this wasn't quite the same performance as what we saw in his first start where he went, you know, goes out and just drops a hammer on the Bucks, but still has 33 rushing yards. That's nice to see. Does make the two mistakes with the interceptions. But he's certainly an upgrade over what Eli Manning is this year. You know, that's just pretty much undebatable. And Sterling Shepard's a good player. Evan Ingram kind of disappears today a little bit, but that's going to happen.
That's fantasy football.
That's fantasy football for you. Against Washington, you love to see it. And Golden Tate coming back, like Golden Tate's no slouch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Golden Tate was on pace for one of his best years with the Lions before he got traded last year, you know, mid-season, and get sent to a team where he really didn't have like an ideal fit with the Eagles late last year. So I still think the collection of weapons here is actually pretty nice. I like what Daniel Jones is doing. I think the offensive line improving is one of the quietest stories.
So that's what I was going to actually say, was that to me, the most impressive stat coming out of this week was that Daniel Jones didn't take a sack.
Yeah.
So
he took a lot. He was under pressure a lot last week.
Right. The matchup has to be part of this. But the fact that the O-line was able to keep him protected. I also think that, you know, we don't talk about this, but a sack, I think, is half a quarterback stat right? It's not
more
just evidence
than that
of a right. Deshaun Watson's a perfect example of this. Like, yes, his O-line has been trashed for many years, but he also holds on to the ball way too long. So I like the fact that this O-line and this quarterback are working in at least some sort of harmony. And again, Minnesota next week,
and
a
New
much
England.
Truer test when
yeah.
you have, you know, Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin coming at you.
Maybe you're looking at Giants players right now. Like, I know we got a question before we started taping about, you know, is Wayne Gallman a guy that you want to package with like another, like a Jarvis Landry or Robert Woods type to maybe try to upgrade right now? Maybe Gallman, it's a good time
it's
to
so
get out of him before this brutal two-game stretch, and then maybe some of these other Giants players you want to buy back in on after they get past this Vikings Patriots part of the schedule. But overall, I do think that the Giants are much more interesting still. I still feel that way even after today's game. How do you feel about Haskins coming out of it? I mean, he's in a nightmare spot. Like, you talk about sacks being a quarterback stat. There was one time, it was one sack he took in this game where I was just like, dear God, that it was embarrassing.
So, this was what I was kind of alluding to when I talked about Case Keenum in FFL. Is Case Keenum good? No. But also, the coach, I also think this is a particularly interesting from a football point of view, because Jay Gruden is in a spot where a lot of his job is dependent on Dwayne Haskins' success. Yet Dwayne Haskins, to most everyone's admission, is not ready to play.
Yeah.
And if you are a first-round pick who in 2019 at the quarterback position who is not ready to play a month into the season, that is abnormal. Nobody is sitting quarterbacks anymore and letting them know. The Alex Smith model is the anomaly in the NFL right now. Look at Daniel Jones, right?
They tried their best to sit him, but here we are.
And they were advocates of the Alex Smith model
yeah.
or whatever. So you have an O-line that is still, no one's really talking about the Trent Williams holdout. It's just sort of like facts now.
Yeah.
It's good. That's allowing a ton of pressure. You have a quarterback who is not particularly mobile, despite one, like, what, 18, 20
cute
yard scamper
today, yeah.
or something, right? But for the most part, a statue in the pocket, feeling a bunch of pressure with no real weapons. And don't at me about Terry McLaurin. Yes, Scary Terry's amazing. I understand the narrative of them having been college teammates, but next week, they get Buffalo, I believe. Like, are you kidding me? They're Buffalo or New England?
They
one
get New
the
England
two.
Next week.
They get
week.
New England next week. Patriots haven't allowed a touchdown to a wide receiver yet this season. That's an awful play. Now, week six, Dwayne Haskins is at Miami. Do I really want to, like, bother stashing anything on this offense for that particular matchup? Not in season long. Like, maybe come week six, if I'm getting frisky in DFS, I throw a dart. But I just don't want any part of this offense in a matchup that is not, if he couldn't exploit a matchup against the Giants, then I'm out.
The tough part with quarterback, like, there's a couple of things that you mentioned, like the Alex Smith model. The problem with the Alex Smith model is that you have to have Alex Smith. And like, for all we remember,
well, they did
of Alex Smith. Yeah. The problem is these other, I mean, that's right. That's true. Washington technically does have Alex Smith on their roster, but like Case Keenum in 2019 is not
Chiefs Smith.
Alex Smith.
Right.
Eli Manning in 2019 is certainly not Chiefs Alex Smith. So that's the problem, number one. So then your quarterback has to get thrown into the fire because, like you said, no one sits quarterback for any length of time. But the problem with this, too, is like a lot of these guys aren't prepared. You know, like Dwayne Haskins has never taken a first team rep because nobody gives, like, Chris Thompson said this on Twitter this week. I think it was Thursday night. You know, they're pass catching running back there in Washington. He says, like, you know, the fact someone was like, someone told, like, some reporter tweeted out, a source has told me that, you know, like, Haskins isn't even getting any first team reps. That's like how not high the organization is on. And, you know, he's taking scout team reps. And Chris Thompson said, I've got time. Basically, was like, I've got time for this today. Like, no one gives reps to backup quarterbacks. Like, unless you're, they give reps to starters.
And, but that's also a lovely excuse. Gardner Minshew didn't get any damn reps with the first team either, and he's making magic happen.
That's total. That is totally true. And I think Daniel Jones didn't get any first team reps. He's playing well. I think a lot of it is just the ecosystem that these, even Baker Mayfield, you know, never got a first team rep with. So yeah, the more I'm saying this now, the more I'm actually thinking it can still be an indictment on the quarterback.
I don't think the entire ecosystem is healthy enough for this guy to thrive. No.
Yeah. And I usually say this sarcastically, but like, you hate to see it.
The inverse of that, though, in terms of creating a lovely ecosystem for a quarterback that the team did not anticipate being the starter, would be Indianapolis and Jacoby Brissett. You had some really powerful takes when we weren't filming, just shooting the, you know what, in the middle of the day. Do you think Jacoby Brissett is a QB1 for fantasy purposes? A top, let's say, 14 guy?
I mean, I think he's in that, like, priority streamer type, which, yeah, I would say around is, like, QB14. Because, like, today he doesn't have his number one receiver. And to be fair, he threw, like, a back-breaking interception that was brutal. His completion percentage, 24-46, wasn't great. He's not, like you said, he's not an elite quarterback or anything like that, but
a capable manager
that, like, coming into today, he had a 7-1 touchdown interception ratio, completing almost 72% of his passes. And then in a good matchup like this for fantasy, goes out and throws 3 touchdowns, you know, with guys like Eric. And some of it was in garbage time, but points
all
are points.
Counts.
It all counts. And I think he's a guy that when you're looking at matchups and
he's got a good
way,
one
next week, he's playing the Chiefs. If you didn't pick him up off your waiver wire this week, I think that, you know, and he's only 35% owned in Yahoo League. So, like, he's a guy that's still out on a lot of waiver wires. You know, if you lost the great Case Keenum today from your fantasy team, maybe you'll play Jacoby Brissett next week. But point is, I still think he's got a lot of upside on a week-to-week basis because, as you mentioned, this ecosystem is very healthy for a guy to come in with a lot of first-team reps based on what he was doing in the offseason with Andrew Luck, you know, not there because of injury.
So we like to play a game called Tilted or Jilted during our FFL halftime shows. I want to play one with you with one character.
All right.
Character player.
A character.
From this same game. Marlon Mack was supposed to have himself a game today, but he only carried the ball 11 times for 39 yards. Now, that was obviously because game flow got away from this team. But are you tilted or jilted on Mack?
I'm just tilted, but it's a pretty hard tilt because this looked like a great spot. They were, I think at one point, they were a touchdown home favorite over the Raiders. But as you said, like, that's the worry with a player like Marlon Mack because, again, it doesn't matter really what you think about Marlon Mack. They don't want to use him as, like, a feature of the pass game.
Well, so that was the point that I was going to make because Nyheim Hines. So we had
39.
He caught all 6 of his targets, too. Like, it wasn't just, like he was efficient. He kept the job. He proved himself to be more than capable. And at the end of last year, the end of 2018, we started to see Mack more involved in the passing game. And I think that's what convinced a lot of us that at the top of this season, we could rank him more aggressively because he was starting to get those looks. And then in a situation like this, and then that is why I bring up the tilted or jilted thing wasn't because of game flow, but was because, like, well, leave him on the field then.
Yeah, Frank Reich even said coming into the year, like, yeah, we want him as a 3-down back. Like, and he has 6 targets on the year so far and 0 today in that negative game script. That's the problem with Mack. And this is why I still had him as before the Andrew Luck retirement. I had him as outside my top 15 running backs because, yeah, he's got a great ceiling on a week-to-week basis because if the Colts are rolling, you know, he's going to be a guy
as we expected they would with Andrew Luck.
As we certainly thought there would be more of that with Andrew Luck. And he's had big games, right? Like week one, 25 carries, 174 yards, a touchdown against the Falcons. A great matchup. 16 carries, 74 yards, a touchdown. Like, he has those big games, but he's not going to ever have a top 5 at the position type ceiling on a week-to-week basis because of that pass game usage. And then you have to worry about stuff like this where the Raiders come out and get an early lead, and then you're like, oh, you know, damn, we got to play from behind. And mm-hmm. Marlon Mack is just not a part of that game plan.
Fascinating, too, because heading into this game, he had the most carries, I believe, at 61, averaging over 20 a game amongst running backs. So keeping an eye on that. Let's see, where do we want to go next? Oh, my goodness. Just side note, is Darren Waller ever going to score a darn touchdown? It's not going to be next week against the Bears, or maybe it will be next week against the Bears because that's fantasy football. And that's hope fantasy football.
I like that analysis right there. Yes, he'll eventually score a touchdown.
He's still a baller. We still like him, but it would be great if he could find the end zone. It'd be great. It'd just be great all around. We talked about Nick Chubb, didn't we?
We did talk a lot. I mean, yeah, we talked a lot about Nick Chubb. We touched a little bit on it. Like, great. This is what we expected out of Nick Chubb. I thought it was honestly encouraging that in the moment where I thought Freddie Kitchens needed to, you know, look in the mirror and see where things were at with this Browns offense, it was very clear that they needed to. I thought the offense, like last year, obviously Baker Mayfield, kind of the star of the show. You know, they're making a lot of downfield passes, but you can say what you want about like the running game and does it matter? But I think the offense flowed really well through Nick Chubb last year. And I think that today was a good example of why they need to kind of recommit to that. Like, when this team is tough with its, because I think Nick Chubb's just such a good back, when they flow through Nick Chubb and then they try to make plays based off that, I think that's when they're at their best as an offense.
I think also you talked about, and it's a great point that you made over the summer, if this defense is to become more efficient, then Nick Chubb will be more relied upon.
Yeah.
And we saw that start to bear out in this contest.
Yeah, and they are a good defense.
Yes.
Like, they're a very, very
even
good
if they're secondary is not 100% healthy. I mean, can you imagine when Ward and Greedy Williams are actually on the field?
Yep. They trade for Jalen Ramsey.
Oh, but that I think that also means that Nick Chubb's ceiling is just going to get higher and higher.
Yeah, I think only more good things to come for Nick Chubb. Obviously, Kareem Hunt is lurking in the future, his return,
like
whatever.
Week 11, though? Week 10?
Like, please. You're going to have so many more problems to deal with than Kareem Hunt by week 11. Like, I mean, will we even be here?
You alluded a little. I mean, I hope so. Lord.
I thought you were just going to keep on moving. I was like, you leave that cliffhanger.
You alluded to this a little bit earlier, but is Nuke nuked?
I mean, that,
by
I gotta,
the way, Brett wrote that.
I got to give credit to
That's
Brett
a
on
Brett
that
Raider
one.
Original.
Yeah, I was like, that one actually made me chuckle a little bit. But so far, like the last few weeks, DeAndre Hopkins, 5 for 41, 6 for 67. 5 for 40. And then, of course, obviously week one, he had 8 catches on 13 targets for 111 yards and a pair of scores. But last 3 weeks have not been pretty. You could flow this under the stuff happens. We're live right now, so I have to say stuff instead of what I want to actually say. Oh, I can just say it.
All yeah, right, I'll cool. believe
I mean,
it on the pod.
I mean, you know, shit happens. Like, that's sometimes the answer in fantasy football.
Our Twitter's been deactivated.
Oh, well,
for
you
breaking
hate to see
rules.
It. But sometimes shit happens in fantasy football, and like, this could just be that. But I also think that, you know, even before the Kenny Stills trade, one thing I talked about was that, like, hey, you got to kind of worry about Nuke Hopkins as like a funnel receiver because they have a lot of weapons here now. And they're at a point now where they're all kind of canceling each other out because Will Fuller's not really popping. Kiki Cutie and Kenny Stills, I mean, Kenny Stills has kind of pushed QT to the background.
Until,
but
I mean, we'll see if that changes. We should mention now, in case someone didn't see our halftime show, that Kenny Stills left the contest with a hamstring issue. Yeah. Those can obviously flare up. We don't know what the timetable is on that, but Kiki Cutie would step into the big slot role if Stills were to miss time.
And, you know, you've got Duke Johnson taking like 4 meaningless targets a game.
Duke Johnson love will continue to baffle me.
I feel stupid for that one.
Well, just that one?
Yeah, just that one. I mean, sometimes I'm like, okay, I see where I got to that take. I see where I got to that decision. Yeah, the process there. I'm not really a fan of the process on the Duke Johnson one.
But you were right about the DeAndre Hopkins
process. Right, like right now.
You called that very early on. It's why he wasn't your number one receiver overall heading into the season.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, what's the expectation here now for DeAndre Hopkins? Like, it's not that, I mean, Jacksonville, Jalen Ramsey, obviously that was a tough game. You know, that's a tough spot.
I mean, his coverage, Marshawn Lattimore, who hasn't been playing Marshawn Lattimore-esque football, but still a very good cornerback. That was week one. He still went off for 111 yards. Jalen Ramsey in week two. Casey Hayward in week three.
James Bradbury is pretty solid for the Panthers.
But who does he get in week five? The Falcons. And Trufant got owned by A.J. Brown today. So
I think
you can have yourself a bounce back moment in week five.
Dial up the bounce back game because, I mean, even going forward, I think that's the heart of this take is I think now might be a good time to just go check in with that DeAndre Hopkins manager and say, like, hey, what do you think about selling for maybe 75 cents on the dollar here? Because, like, got the Falcons next week, the Chiefs, the Colts, the Raiders, Jacksonville again.
Without
probably
Jalen
without Jalen Ramsey. Then you got the bye week, Baltimore, Indianapolis, New England. That's when.
Your week 16 is at Tampa Bay.
Juicy.
Nice. All right.
And before that, it's Tennessee, who just bleeds passing touchdowns. Despite the fact they add like a big name free agent. What is the deal with that with the Tennessee Titans? Like they add like a big name free agent in the secondary like every year and they still can't stop giving up touchdowns.
I really thought this would be the week that we see Ryan Tannehill. It didn't happen. So thank you, Atlanta Falcons. If anything, that makes the DeAndre Hopkins bounce back that much sweeter.
That means like the Marcus Mariota truthers, because believe me, they still exist. They just had another
year.
They all
year. Back from Area 51?
They just had another year tacked onto their lives. Like, we have to deal with them now for a whole nother year because
of
this
four
one. Yeah, like, the clips will be hitting Twitter any moment now. And they will, like, Marcus Mariota can throw the deep ball, see, like this. And then you watch him in any game and he's, like, the most scattershot, exhausting player. So, like, watching Marcus Mariota, it shouldn't be this rude to him, like, on a week where he's coming off a good game, but, like, watching Marcus Mariota, it's, like, soul-sucking. He's like, takes the joy out of watching football because he's just so robotic and, like, doesn't want to do anything that might get him hit.
Well, that's fine. Fair. Although, I don't know. I mean, that was the argument last year, right? It was like, we're going to let him off his chain and let him run a little bit more. And I think he's sort of like, nah, bro, I'm good. I don't need to do that. We will see. So Taylor Lewan should be back next week now that he's had his four weeks of suspension served. So maybe he'll have a little bit more protection, won't feel as spooked, and will feel a little less robotic moving forward. But I wouldn't hold my breath. Still, let's leave some room for optimism. Josh Allen, after feeling very optimistic about the Bills for the first couple of weeks of the season, Josh Allen had a tough matchup against New England. He got concussed real bad in this one. I mean, that's the injury. And then you had Matt Barkley out there.
Oh, so depressing.
Throwing darts at Cole Beasley's feet, by the way. That was I literally said out loud, what are you doing? I know Cole Beasley's little, but geez.
Not that little. I know that Josh Allen wasn't having like the best game in the world, but like the Bills defense really deserved to win that game. And I tweeted that and like a couple of really sensitive Pats fans hop in my mentions like, what, the Patriots defense don't deserve to win this game? Like, sure. Okay. Sorry, you guys. I can't say anything positive about like any other fan base literally ever without giving you guys due credit for beating Matt frickin' Barkley. But like, yeah, I felt bad for the Bills. I know Josh Allen wasn't having the greatest game ever, but to lose him in that one and then you got to have Matt Barkley trot out there.
Who did you feel worse for, Josh Allen or the couple that got married at halftime?
I didn't even know about this. What?
Oh, yeah. 1,500 couples. So 3,000 humans entered a contest to get married. A contest. Like, they wanted to do this, to get married at halftime during this matchup. And John Kelly walked the bride out. They got, like, a signed football from the owner from Pakula.
Jim Kelly?
Yeah.
I thought you meant John Kelly, the backup Rams running back.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I might have said
go
John
balls,
Kelly.
Go Vols. Am I right, Sully?
I meant Jim Kelly, even if I said John Kelly. Yeah. They got married.
Hell yeah. What a game to get married on. I mean, your team's 3-0 and you got to do it against the Patriots.
They knew a date was coming.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know who caught the bouquet. Also, canapes. Like, I have lots of questions. Like, where's the reception? Let's talk about Rams, Tampa Bay.
Yeah. This was an interesting game because number one,
because Jared Goff sucks.
Yeah. And I came into this game thinking like the Rams have really changed their identity. They're like, they've been a really defensive first team through the first 3 weeks. And like, you know, they didn't have, I don't think they had any layups. Like, they beat Carolina in Carolina before Cam had re-aggravated that foot injury. They played the Teddy Bridgewater led Saints for the most part in week two. But even then, like the Saints are a talented enough team that they're not just like, they're not a give me. So the Bucks drop a literal hammer on the Rams in LA. I mean, Chris Godwin comes in super questionable. It has two touchdowns. Jameis Winston only threw one potentially backbreaking interception, which was pretty brutal. But
Ronald Jones scores a touchdown.
Ronald Jones!
Peyton Barber, a touchdown!
To be fair, homecoming game for Ronald Jones, you know.
Oh, don't do it to me anymore.
Former USC back.
Oh, gosh.
So, narrative.
Stop it.
The narrative was there.
Oh,
he's back in the Coliseum.
Oh, my gosh. He felt the Trojans' love, and he knew he had to do something. Wow. Todd Gurley, though, he also finally started to look a little. I mean, his YPC was real bad. He didn't look particularly fast or explosive, but at least he's getting the goal line exposure, which was the thing we were so concerned about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, Todd Gurley, you could talk out of like both sides of your mouth, right? Like, didn't get very many carries, but he scored two touchdowns. Man, this Rams offense is really not what you'd expect. Got a lot of looks in the passing game, though. That was nice to see, because that was a big. That was like the trope of the week in fantasy football. Like that was the stat of the week that everyone had, was that the Rams had thrown the fewest passes of any team to the running back position. Gurley comes out and gets 11 targets, catches seven balls. So,
well, that's because Jared Goff was so tilted. He was just like, boom, get it out.
Get it out of here. I mean, I think that that's just the way that you're going to have to go with Todd Gurley. Like that's where you're at. The Bucks side of this, though, I think was almost more interesting to me, though.
Like, I will just real quick on Todd Gurley. Sure. I'm going to be interested to see after this game when all of the advanced metrics come in. So Tuesday about.
Hope you're still interested in that one. No.
But I want to see what like the exact stacked front versus base front carry rate in this game.
Yeah.
Was because so far. He is averaging over 4 yards per carry against stacked fronts and over 5.8 in base fronts. So his efficiency hasn't been bad.
Yeah.
He just hasn't been used as prolifically.
Yeah, I just think it kind of is what it is territory with Todd Gurley. Like, right. This is the situation.
He's like a top, what, like a top 18, 20?
Yeah.
18, 20.
The guy you're probably going to want to start unless you're really well off at the running back position.
Ooh, lucky you.
Yeah, good for you.
So, Matt, are there any other things you want to discuss? Anything else like really popping out to you that you think that our listeners need to know about, be aware of?
No, I think that about does it for week four. How about you? You got anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
I always feel like we don't talk about the Thursday game.
Yeah, Thursday kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. What's your concern level for Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, what do you mean? I mean, he's coming off like the best game of the season.
Right. But heading into this, but that was against a poor matchup,
yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, a good matchup for him, a burnable secondary. He hadn't looked good. People were ready to bury him. I was getting added, like, why is he your QB8 heading into this week? Has he proven that he is back now?
My talking point with the Packers had always been like, hey, they're 3-0. And the side of the ball that had not found itself yet was the one manned by a Hall of Fame quarterback. And, like, it was very clear the offense hasn't gelled yet. And I still think even in this game, there were signs that it hadn't really gelled yet. I'm not totally sure if I'm sold on the Matt LaFleur experience. But I still think Rodgers, like, this was a game where, like, Rodgers went into, like, God mode level a couple times and, like, showed he still had that within his range of outcomes. And, man, this could have even been a bigger game if, like, Jimmy Graham wasn't just a total dust ball at this point of a player.
Ooh. And Jamal Williams, he obviously went to the hospital.
Yeah.
After that game.
It was a tough game to watch because, like, it's the sandwich of the game was head injury. That was tough.
All right. So I'm so glad I brought it back up. And we get to end on that note. Anyway, he's not going to play next week. I think we can all agree on that. But he was released from the hospital. So that's great. So that things are a little bit positive. Jordan Howard is only owned in 55%. So maybe your fantasy league, but also he's seeing the goal line exposure. And that is very interesting. And he scored multiple times on Thursday night. So sorry, Miles Sanders owners. Maybe you need to. I wouldn't get rid of Miles Sanders, but just stash him for a little bit. He's not an automatic must play.
People are still trying to play Miles Sanders. I'm like,
you
haven't gotten any indication that he's someone to play at this point.
Well, his work in the passing game was a little bit.
He's all right.
It's fine.
He's all right.
Say something nice so I can get out of here.
Liz, I think you've done a great job all day. I think this has been one of your best performances. We think we had.
Well,
a,
now he's lying, so we're just gonna.
No,
end.
We had. I think we had a really nice couple segments in FFL, and I had a lot of fun on this podcast right now.
I had a lovely time, clearly as well. We'll be back on Friday, y'all. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza underscore FF. That's at Matt Harmon underscore BYB. We're out.